Hi, and welcome to Buy Back the Block series, where we talk everything real estate and investment. We believe in empowering those in our communities to take pride in where they live and to share stories of journeys travelled and their successes. Every journey is unique, but also important as it provides an opportunity for those in the community to learn and progress through the experiences of others. There is infinite power that exists through collectively working together.
First and foremost, this is my first recording since the new year. Been out in Africa 2 and a bit months. The intention was, since COVID numbers were down, it might be a better place to be working out of. Took my whole family, had the sun on my back. Still COVID's out there, but not as much. At least I've got a bit more space to play around with, to run around with the little one. And basically also hang out with the grandparents, which was definitely something that I wanted to do. Now I've come back very much refreshed and ready for the new year. So it's a really late new year. Still been communicating with people that are working within the property scene. And over the past 3 to 4 months, it's fair to say that there's been a bit of a frenzy, not just in the property space, but in modern finance and how industries are actually being changed. So on today's episode, I have brought back one of my good friends, Ashley Reed, who is a mortgage and financial advisor for Sterling Capital Group, to give an opinion of what he sees the scene as being and also where exactly we're going. So first and foremost, I want to thank Ashley and introduce Ashley to the show. So hello, Ashley.
Hello there, Kevin. Thank you for inviting me today.
How's everything going with you in the new year?
The new year has been interesting. It was like we took a step backwards, to be honest with you, in January, because December, as you know, we came out of lockdown for 2 weeks, and then we went into semi-lockdown, and then Christmas, everything was open again, which was probably the worst idea, and then we went into a lockdown. So it's just been up and down, and then January was like, right, because of what happened in December, yeah. It really took the lenders really, you know, took a big step backwards. Right. In regards to process, in regards to cases they was taking on, in regards to everything. So, yeah, it was an interesting month, interesting beginning of the year. It's one of those sayings where, you know, you move the goalpost and then they move it again and they move it again and again and again. So it's kind of been like that. Lots of business has come forward. People are actively looking. People are, you know, they want to get this stamp duty holidays, so they're trying to get on the market and they're trying to find their properties. But what I've noticed is that there's nothing available.
When you say nothing available, what do you mean by way of properties or deals or what do you mean?
So I have a client of mine who, she's been my client for years, very good client of mine. I think when I met her, she had one property, she now has four. And she was going for a fifth one. So I said to her, okay, no problem. We'll raise capital for my property now. She'd done some renovations. So she raised an additional 100 grand. So she was really happy. She had enough deposit to buy a property. I said to her, buy another property in the same area. You only bought there a year ago. So buy another one in the same area. You bought that house for 340,000. A year later, it's worth 475. So it's a good area. So maybe buy in the same area. The only thing she could find in that area at that value was a flat. She could not get a house. She couldn't get a house.
So are you trying to tell me that house prices are still going up?
Is that much? So wow. I was shocked and I was surprised. I was like, wow, that £340,000 in that area, you should be able to, there should be a few houses. No, they've gone up that fast. And obviously it's because you couldn't, any house between say 300,000 and say 450, it would go. It will be gone.
Was that anything to do with the fact that we've got the stamp duty situation?
Yeah.
People are basically ramping up their house prices to compensate for the stamp duty that you're not going to pay.
So that's an interesting question. Yes, 100%. The stamp duty has made people more active, and you know, people are trying to buy their properties. But are people ramping up their prices, or has everything just sold? And I believe, literally, they just sold. I don't think people are saying, oh, because what's happened is people are putting the houses on the market and the houses are going down in value. There was a house on loan that was put up for 1.6 million, and 2 weeks later, it went down to 1.5 million. The market, people will drive your price down to a more realistic price to be sold at the price it should be. And 1.4 to 1.5 is what the house rate should be going for in this particular area. But in that area that I mentioned, for 340, 355 in a three bedroom house, shouldn't be anything more than that. There's just nothing available. She went up to 350, she went up to 400, hardly anything there.
Wow.
Houses are gone.
Wow. You know,
so it's obviously a very good time to sell a property if you want to sell to retire or, you know, leave the country or buy another property cash because you've got enough equity and so on and so forth. Very good time for that. So I think a lot of people have done that. And all those people that was trying to sell a couple of years ago or a year ago have now been able to sell their houses and sell very quickly. Mm-hmm. So lots happening, which is really good. But now people can't buy it. And then you have to ask yourself the question, if there's no properties on the market, when the new properties go on the market, what is going to be valued at? What's going to be the value of those properties? Can we afford that? Am I going to get priced out? Are the values going to go too high? Is this another bubble that we've created because of the stamp duty?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I've been thinking about. But I mean, along the same lines too, like with all things, from a situation, you always have the gainers and the losers. A lot of people have lost their jobs, but then along the same lines too, a lot of credit facilities have been opened up to people. A lot of grants have been opened up to people who,
yeah.
I mean, let's face it, bounce back loans and the likes have been exploited by a lot of people. So you've got a lot of money that might potentially still be on the scene, and that people are now using to purchase things. And as you've rightly said, if it's a situation where this money's available and it's buying up a lot of stuff, there's probably just not a lot of stock that's available. And people are relocating. People are looking at different areas now.
Yeah. Outside London has boomed. Yeah, outside London has boomed massively, yeah. And lenders like outside London. Lenders don't like London anymore. Yeah, what I noticed with the lenders, if you find property in London, they want to do a valuation, they want to see it, they will take their time. Buy a property in Birmingham, they stop valuation often 3-4 days.
Outside of London, there is still a lot of value. I mean, if you're buying a property for 200 to 300,000 outside of London, there's still a greater degree of affordability. People can work anywhere now, as compared to London, where you're paying anything from 400 upwards. People are now asking themselves, is the business case still the same for people to want to stay in and work in London? So you've constantly got to balance that argument. So even in my case, like I've asked myself whether or not my London portfolio, whether or not I should still keep it, or whether or not I should sell up and look for other places outside of London where there is still value to be had. Because what we were previously chasing, which a lot of the time was capital appreciation, we're realizing that the increases aren't going to be as high as they previously were. In maybe it's time that we chase our returns and just wait for those outside of London places where maybe the amount might not be as high, but the percentages are a lot higher, you know.
Yeah, because Boris did say that he wants to move the wealth. He wants to spread the wealth out throughout the country. He doesn't want it to just be London.
Yeah.
So by spreading the wealth throughout the country, means you're going to raise the house prices throughout the country. Yeah. So someone in Birmingham that bought a house for 130,000, in the next 10 years, that house could be worth 600 grand.
That's the truth. That's the truth, definitely.
You know, because if you start spreading the wealth, then you can, like I said, a lot of certain businesses, they can work from home. I know we were talking about this earlier. You know, businesses can work from home. Some businesses, they can't. They need the office environment. They need that people to be able to communicate with other departments quickly to make things happen. But the ones that can work from home, I can hire someone in Scotland. I can hire someone in Ireland. Now, you put that person on 100 grand a year living in those areas, put them on 200 grand a year, their life's changed. Their area's changed. You know, things change.
That's the truth.
They bought a house for 100 grand. They want 100 grand a year now.
Yeah, and the quality of their life is definitely going to... because, I mean, look, property is ultimately what we talk about. But in recent times, there's been a lot of talk around other things, such as, you know, stock markets, the scene around crypto, and the gains that are basically being had around there. Do you think... This is pretty much a far-fetched question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you think that there's ever going to be any products available at any point in time in the near future that will take into consideration crypto?
You know, that's a very good question, because I believe Dubai was selling hotels or a hotel, and they said it would only accept it by Bitcoin. Yeah, that was in Dubai. And I remember hearing that. And it was like, you know, the thing is about when you start talking cryptocurrency, it's very volatile and it's easily to manipulate. Yeah. I think Tesla, Elon Musk, he purchased, was it 1.5 billion? Obviously, that drove up the market. It drove up the value. But guess what? If you take that money out, there's a crash in your hand.
Along the same lines too, it's done so much for, I mean, there's a limited supply of Bitcoin. He could quite possibly cash out at any point and manipulate the market like that. But it can also be looked at from the fact that because he's in it, there's a lot of other people that would potentially go into the space also.
Of course.
There was talk, I don't know how true it is, that Apple was also looking at cryptocurrency and potentially putting some of that on its books, because you've got a lot of companies that are out there that are extremely liquid and do not actually need the money or the reserves that they currently have in the form of cash, and we all know that cash is losing value right now.
That's correct.
So it's an interesting one. Like I've a couple of things that I've tried to do in recent times is to try and get the stories of people who have actually made money in crypto and gone into property. But it seems like one thing that I've realized, especially by asking that question, crypto guys don't like talking about crypto wealth, which is understandable due to the implications of talking about how much you've gained from the crypto space. It is evident that people have made a lot of money in crypto. You know?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, they've made a lot of money for cryptocurrency, and there's a lot of money to make. And there's an old saying, you've got to be the first one in and the first one out. And so the ones that I was able to run into it and get into it quite early, those are the ones that's going to make the most gain. I mean, people from last year that, you know, before the coronavirus hit, if you put in, you know, 10 grand, what's that going to be worth now? Especially after what happened in January, 1.5 billion, you know, and people like Elon, like these guys can manipulate the market. They can manipulate it. So Apple gets involved and Facebook get involved. They control the market. They control the games. And then what they do is they'll sell their shares and get out. Everybody else follows. And this is like lambs to the slaughter. Yeah. Because the ones that come in later, the ones that are going to lose big, because they went in big and they went in first and they came out quick as well.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was reading, it was just a Twitter feed, but someone was saying that Tesla's made more money on that one trade than they've ever made doing business as a car manufacturer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's crazy. That's crazy. Absolutely bonkers.
That's insulting.
But yeah. Absolutely. And considering the fact that a lot of people actually consider Tesla to be an overvalued company, that is pretty much a rich analogy to have. I mean, I question whether in future you could actually use, the same way Tesla saying, there's a potential that you'd be able to buy cars at a particular point with your crypto. So your Bitcoin, you can use a Bitcoin to buy a Tesla. Now imagine if
the whole world.
Exactly. Imagine if you were told that you could now use a Bitcoin as your deposit. A bank would accept that as a deposit. That would change the game in a major way. I mean, people are effectively saving with crypto right now. Why put your money in a bank when you could just buy one Bitcoin, keep it in your personal wallet, watch it at 5x in a year, and that's my deposit for my house. The rules are completely changing. The rules about business are completely changing. You know,
but they have to be careful because Bitcoin's not regulated.
Yeah.
So no one knows where that money's come from. So a lot of people that don't do, you know, don't make their money in the most honorable way. Yeah. They can hide the money in Bitcoin and make more money. So you say, oh, you can buy your house for it. No, I can't see that happening. Not in the UK. Do I see it happening eventually in the future? 100%.
Yeah.
I would definitely think 100% in the future these things will be happening, but they will have to regulate that currency. It will have to be regulated. It will have to be watched. You can't just put in 1.5 billion and not have to do it, ask, and you know, where did that money come from? How was it accumulated? you know, these are the things you have to ask, because at the end of the day, money laundering is a serious thing. And that's the thing about Bitcoin. It allows you to launder money.
The exchanges right now by which you buy and sell crypto, there's an increased level of, KYC. So know your customer prior to you being able to trade on these platforms. And information is definitely shared between governments and these organizations. I mean, you can't operate in certain countries unless you hit certain criteria in selling to nationals, you know. So you're constantly going to have that situation where governments are going to start to encroach, and which, to be honest, for a lot of crypto heads, that is what is most discouraging about the scene, because their intention for getting into it was to have less scrutiny from
freedom.
From governments, you know. And with government now encroaching on that, it sort of defeats the purpose for people. But I mean, I can see. I mean, you've spoken about Dubai, where you can actually buy
hotels.
I mean, the truth of the matter is, these are the people who are going to lead the way. If someone's got 1,000 bitcoins sitting somewhere, and he wants to invest in something, and he knows that he can purchase something with few questions in locations such as that, people will take it up. I mean, let's ask ourselves this question too. I mean, the UK was prior to Brexit was a major financial capital. We still question what our relationship is going to be going forward with the EU, and whether or not that position automatically will be bestowed on someone else. How does the UK still remain competitive? The EU is known for being very inflexible and slow and sluggish as to how it operates. Maybe the UK government could actually have a competitive advantage by actually embracing crypto in such a major way. People actually want to continue to do financial transactions here.
Well, you have to just look at the UK government right now, what they've been doing in relation to the vaccine. And now the EU are saying they were slow off the mark and they made a mistake, and they tried to bring in a sanction in regards to the vaccine and things like that, because they're upset that they haven't got any vaccines for themselves for the EU nationals. The thing is, the UK government, they're forward thinkers. They, you know, we developed the vaccine within our own country, which means we pay costs and we can sell it at a premium. If you see the size of the EU and how many people are there and how many vaccinations they will actually potentially need, it's a lot. So the UK are forward thinkers. Now, the question is, do we think that the UK will go crypto and go digital? And I would answer the question quite honestly. I think the whole world will go digital and go crypto at some point in the future.
Yeah, that's the truth.
As for now, the British pound and the American dollar, you know, would there be different forms of cryptos? Would it be the British crypto, the American, the dollar crypto, or what it may be? Who knows? The problem that we have with crypto is that, what is it backed by? It's backed by money. It's not the money in the UK used to be backed by gold.
Yeah.
That's what it was backed by. So what's crypto backed by? So that means I can inflate the market then.
But this is the thing though. But governments have been printing, look where we're going into anyway, we're talking monetary policy here. But the truth of the matter is, as you rightly mentioned, we deviated from the gold standard. Governments have just been printing money whenever they wanted to print money. So although we did used to, it was previously a situation where it was backed by physical gold, that is no longer the case. So that same argument of, what is crypto backed by? What is the pound backed by? Because it's not backed by gold anymore. There's only a few countries who actually have large gold reserves. And one of those countries is China, where they've actually got gold reserves, plus they've got digital currency, plus they're killing us on exports. Yeah.
They're killing us on everything.
Yeah, on everything.
They're potentially going to become the new world power. Yeah. And America are obviously very concerned about that, because obviously American dollars traded around the world, and you take that away from them, they lose a lot of money, which I know they don't want to do. The thing about when we talk about crypto and governments and so on and so forth, we're heading into a no man's. No one knows. No one could ever know. We could assume this. I know one thing. I do know we have to go crypto worldwide. It will happen at some point in our future. As for when, who knows? Is it going to be the best thing? You might as well say we're doing crypto now. It's just with paper.
That's true.
You might as well say it now because it's not backed by anything. Just like Bitcoin's not backed by anything. But the difference is our money is regulated. Yep. Bitcoin isn't. Yep. Once they regulate it, is it going to change? I can bet you it probably will. Yeah. And will people be buying houses on it and selling the houses in Bitcoin at different rates? Probably so. You know,
I would be surprised, or I wouldn't be surprised actually, if people have purchased property with certain, let's just say, certain deals were done behind the scenes with crypto also.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if someone invested their money into Bitcoin, had the money in there, made a lot of money from it, took their money out and put it into their physical bank account, had it in there and then used that as a deposit to buy a property because they could easily do that. Anyone can do that. And I can't see, I don't know if that's illegal, but I can't imagine a bank saying, oh, where did you get £40,000 from? They transferred it from their Bitcoin account that's online into their personal account. I can't see why the bank wouldn't take that money. They probably would. But once again, because it's not regulated, that's the issue. But Bitcoin is no man's land. Yeah. And right now, it's like art isn't regulated. So people can do whatever they want with art until one day someone says, hold on a minute, no, we need to regulate this. We can't carry on this way. But Bitcoin is different because it's huge. Art is huge. I mean, art is art.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also subjective.
Don't even get me started on that because some things that someone says is art, I think, wow, okay, fair enough. But then other things, what I think is art, another person would say, that's not art at all. So who knows? But, you know, will banks go Bitcoin? Will they go crypto? Yeah, they will. At some point they will because... it's funny, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine and we were talking about smart home and he was saying, no, I don't want this and no, I don't want a smart home. I want a key to open my door and so on and so forth. And I said to him, whether you like it or not, times are changing. You got a choice. You can either change with the times or get left behind. That's your choice. Times are changing. Bitcoin, cryptocurrency is the future. Coronavirus is our future. It's changing how we work. It's changing how we think. It's changing how we communicate with people, how we interact with people. It's changing the world. These things will come into place. There will be a new virus that will come one day and we'll be better prepared because of what we've been through with this virus. But these things are inevitable. It will happen. It's all comes down to you and how you adapt to your new surroundings. Because I can promise you something, I've been working with banks, I've been working with lenders, and they are definitely adapting. And adapting in a way that may not favour people how it used to favour them a year ago. You know, they're cutting rates now, though, which is good, which is really good. That's a good sign because obviously the vaccine and the confidence in the market, they've gone back to 10% lending. So when we had our podcast the last time, there was no 10% deals. Now there's 10% deals. The rates are ridiculously high. And people think, oh, the interest rates are low. Let me go on a ladder and buy a property. Ladies and gentlemen, the interest rates are not low.
Right.
The interest rates are high.
When you say high, what sort of percentages are we talking about?
3%.
Right.
2.99% on the 10%. This time last year, that would have been 2.1. Yeah, they're high. They're not passing on the savings, but they're manipulating it. Oh, the interest rates are low. The base rate's at its lowest. People think, oh, the base rate's at its lowest. I'm going to get on the market now. You're buying at a higher rate. And these are the things that they do. And then they're being picky of who they want to lend to. But I'm going to ask a question. Let's say in January, 10 people didn't get their mortgages for whatever reason. 6 months later, those 10 people will be able to get a mortgage. What was the difference between January and June? The difference is...
criteria.
Yeah, the lenders have decided, okay, we trust the economy now. Things are going back to normal. Everything's great again. Okay, come in, you can have your mortgage now. So why couldn't I have it 6 months ago? What was the difference? Mm-hmm. There was no difference. Mm-hmm. But someone in their office is saying, oh, we predict that there's going to be this. We predict there's going to be that. We predict so on and so forth. Okay, but all you're doing is you're just bringing it into existence. You're making it happen. You're creating. So everything you're saying you're predicting, you're making it a reality. Because if people want to buy and they have the money, have the deposit, why can't they buy? Someone's on furlough, they can't buy a property now because they're on furlough, they have to wait till they're off furlough to buy a property. Okay, then. So now I'm on furlough, can I buy a property now? Yeah, you can. But why couldn't I buy it before? I was already going back to work. I didn't lose my job. They furloughed me because they were closed because they had to because it's a nightclub. or because it's a gym, so they have to close.
So that's,
oh, but you might not get your job back. That's the argument. You may not get your job back. Okay, but I'm getting my job back. How do you know I might not get my job back? Or predicting things that people, you know, it's the whole mystic meds. They got their ball and they're predicting the future, and everyone's preparing for the worst, which you should do. You should always prepare for the worst. But the worst may never happen. So then what now? What do we do?
Question. I mean, okay, so we're talking about the potential changing nature of finance. People look at property, first of all, as something, and especially in the case of the UK, as a necessity for a lot of people who need to own homes to live in. But then there's also people who are using it as a vehicle for investment and for retirement.
Yeah.
Stock markets are a bit jumpy right now. They seem to be doing, especially the American markets. Do you also see any sort of flight or changes in the environment around the sort of investments that people are making around, well, in the case of stocks and shares? And
yeah, so the stock market, it depends on the kind of stocks that you invest into. You can go and, you know, you can do stocks where they're high risk, high reward.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can win big or lose big. And then you can go for government stocks, which are pretty much secure. You get your money every 6 months, the same amount. And, you know, they're pretty much sturdy because it's backed against the government, the economy. That's created by the government. So there are various different types of stocks out there for people to look into, to buy into, to invest in. But there's a rule. At the end of the day, it's gambling. Whether you're going to a betting shop or you're speaking to a stockbroker, it's still gambling. And there's winners and losers.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they always say bet responsibly. Same in this instance. You, whatever you're putting up, whatever money you're spending, you have to be prepared to lose. You might be an investor that wants to buy a property and you may have 100 grand. You have to be prepared to lose 100 grand because that property, something could happen and you could... And this hasn't happened in many, many years.
Yes,
I think
yeah.
1990s, collapse of the bearing banks was when we had a massive crash. And we haven't crashed like that. And just to be clear, in 2008, it wasn't our property market that crashed. It was America's property market that crashed the rest of the world. Yeah?
Right.
It wasn't ours. So buying and investing 100K, but the point I'm making is that if you have 100 grand and you want to buy a property for that return, you have to be prepared to lose the 100 grand because there's a possibility that you could lose it. Because judging on history, it has happened in the past. The lenders are cutting rates now. So interest rates are being cut, which is good. It means they're encouraging more borrowing. But at the same time, if something's happening next month, that if it happens, it will crash the market. Yeah? It will crash it. And that's the stamp duty.
Yeah.
If the stamp duty doesn't get extended, the market will crash. Oh, yeah, 100%. And I'm very much, everybody's been saying to me, I remember I told you guys this story the last time with my brother, and I said he was buying his property. He said, bro, the property's going to crash by 60%. I'm not going to buy it. I said, don't be silly. And in the end, he ended up buying it. And, you know, he got his property and he's so happy now and he's made money and so on and so forth. But if he had listened to the media and listened to what was going on, he would have lost that deal. He would have, you know, he would have been kicking himself now. But the reason why the property market's been so strong is because of the stamp duty holiday. You take that away,
people are going to
slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to slow down. And you're going to slow down during a pandemic. Okay? You're going to do it during the pandemic where people haven't gone back to work properly yet. And let's face it, a lot of people are bored. They're fed up. Some people have lost their jobs, unfortunately. Some people are trying to find new jobs. Some people have a job, but just haven't worked for 10 months. They've just been at home and can't go anywhere, can't do anything, you know. And, you know, we talk about mental health and things like that, but it affects you. Right? It really does. So, you know, when you look at all these aspects and you think, oh, great, now my property's gone down by 5%, 10%. And it will happen if they don't extend. Now, I have seen a lot of articles on this. I've noticed the latest one today was they're planning to extend it by 6 weeks to give people a chance to complete, which ain't going to be long enough at all. Mm-hmm. I've seen petitions for it to be extended for 6 months, and I've seen petitions for it to be abolished altogether. They're planning on making the congestion charge longer, bigger, the UNESH charges throughout the whole of London. They're doing all these things to raise extra monetary tax. I know they're doing it in Birmingham as well, because I was with my dad, and my dad is saying, yeah, a lot of Birmingham are going UNESH, which is they're not used to, because they were on cards, which is making people now buy new cards, forcing them to buy newer cars. You need to turn that money around, because people that was just living in their old cars, now they have to change it because they have to pay more money to drive it. So they deal with these things to drive the market. They can't afford to crash the property market. So it's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen over the next 6 months and see where things go.
I take it the 6 weeks that they're trying to extend it by would have something to do with the fact that they're expecting to open up a lot of businesses again. So they believe that within maybe by about May, June, businesses will start opening up again and we'll be able to trade. How realistic it is. But that's the sort of thing that they're playing around with.
I think that's a bit of Boris. That's a bit of Boris being a bit over enthusiastic, because yes, we could be talking, I mean, me and you could talk for about 4 hours in the cost of the vaccine and does it work and should you do it and should you not and so on and so forth. But the reality is, they don't know how effective the vaccine really is yet, because we've only had it for 2 months. Yeah, we started it, I think, in December. We're in February now, so 15 million people. So they haven't got enough data to determine whether it really works. And then we've got new variants because this virus is changing. How does that work? We don't know. This is the reality. Just like Bitcoin, we don't know. The same thing with the virus. We don't know. So if you do something too soon, thinking, oh, it's going to be fine. Well, it was meant to be fine over the summer. That's what we did. Was it eat out to help out?
Yeah.
That was a waste of time. That was a waste of money. What was the point in that? Just for those businesses to now shut for 3 months. Are we going to do eat out to help out again? You know, what are we going to do? They said there's a new help to buy scheme we're going to do. Okay, so what? Everyone going to do the new help to buy scheme? Is that what we're going to do? You know, it's... The thing is, we're in a position where we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because the virus plays a big key point on whatever we do. People need to work. People need to earn a living. Are they able to? Can they go to work? Is it safe? Are we protecting our loved ones? Hence the reason why I suppose we're in the situation that we're in right now. And one of the reasons why we're having a conversation, because the lenders have changed. The lenders, if you've had a bounce back loan, the lender can check that you to see if you had a bounce back loan. Okay. Lenders can also they can check now. They can also check how much you had when you took it out, whether it was May or June, or whether it was December, January. They can see how much you took out as well. They can also see if you've been furloughed, if you've been taking furlough as well, if you've taken furlough for yourself. Wow. Now, they did this because big companies like McDonald's and big billionaire companies were doing furlough.
The sort of companies you wouldn't expect them to.
Exactly. They didn't need to take it, but they was taking it, you see. So that's why they made it available. But now it's hurting the little people, you know, because the banks are saying, oh, you're on a mortgage, but you've done a furlough. You took a bounce back loan. And one of my clients said, yeah, because it was offered to me. I haven't spent it. I've got the money still in my bank account. But if I need it, I have it. Yeah. Oh, well, because you took it, we're not going to give you a mortgage. Outrageous. So he just said, okay, well, I can pay it back because I haven't used it. I just took it just in case. No, that's a final decision. Like I said, I think we mentioned this to you before, moving the goalpost. And that's what this is. You know, they're moving the goalpost to suit their needs. But in 2-3 months' time, it will change again. Oh, yeah, you know, come along, no problem. Get a mortgage. You know, I think they should, and this is obviously just my opinion. I wouldn't say it's going to happen. But I think they should be looking at more 6 months for the stamp duty, only because I think in the next 6 months, a lot more things will become clearer in regards to the vaccine and how successful it is, the numbers of infection and the rate of infection, the rate of deaths in 6 months' time will be very clear. The data will be, you know, black and white. And more importantly, it will give people 6 months to get back into work, start earning money, and feel comfortable about spending money in the economy. And if you say 6 weeks, I think they're gearing up for people going back to work by the 3rd of March. So we're talking, they would have, okay, 2 months. 2 months isn't that bad. And obviously we'd be going into summer. So summer's obviously, you know, summer, and the rates of infection will be low. But winter is when it will spike. Winter is when we get variants.
Yeah.
That's when we get variants. That's when things change. So we should be thinking, okay, look, what's going to happen then? And protecting the property market is important, because you crash that market, you crash the economy.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You crash the property market, you will crash the economy. Because as we said, we are the financial hub. We're known for finance, loans, mortgages. That's what we're known for. Yeah, you take that away, it's not going to be good. So it'd be interesting to see what they're going to do. I'll be so surprised if they extend for 6 weeks. I'll be very shocked.
But they might just extend it for 6 weeks, another 6 weeks.
Yeah, I just don't see, what can you do as a business if you give yourself 6 weeks? Is you're not going to see many changes. So if you're a mortgage firm, as I am, and I buy leads, and I buy leads for 6 weeks, where am I going to see the results? If I do it for 6 weeks or if I do it for 6 months? 6 months, because I can see, okay, yes, this is it. This is a sure thing. This is a good bet. You don't want to stop it at a point where it could crash it. So they're under the impression that by May, end of April, May, things are going to be booming again, and we're going to see a big spike in spending and things happening and so on and so forth. And that may be the case. But like I said, we haven't taken into account any variants. We haven't taken nothing into account. We're just thinking, okay, we've got the virus now, we've got the vaccine, everything's going to be fine. Yeah. That may not be the case. We won't be stuck in our houses. We will be able to meet, socialize, and, you know, we could actually do this face-to-face, Kevin. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
You could do it face-to-face, yeah, because you can't meet people, you know. Well, you can for work. I suppose you can do this for work. They are allowing you to do it for work, but... Yeah, it's an interesting concept. It's a new world that we've entered into. And I mentioned this in our last podcast. I said this is going to be a new world. Well, welcome to the new world.
Yeah.
And what are your experiences in this new world? Have you tried to buy a property? How's that gone?
Yeah.
What's been your experiences? Have you been knocked back by a bounce back loan? Have you been knocked back because you've been furloughed? How did that make you feel? Yeah. Because to be honest with you, it's like you're being punished for taking something that was given to you, that you was told to take, but you're punishing me for it. And the lender will say, and this is, I quote this because I've asked them, we have to please our shareholders. And I think to myself, how much billions do you make a day, like daily, weekly? At what point, and it's funny, you know, I said this to them as well. I said, in 2008, you got a bailout from the government, which is taxpayers' money. At what point do you feel that you need to give back to society? Because you took from society, when do you give back? Considering you're still making money, you're still doing well, when do you give back to society? We've got a piece of investors. Okay, that's interesting. So next time you're in trouble and you're about to go crash and burn, then, well, we've got to please our people.
Yeah, that's true. It's just the self-preservations of bankers. Some might refer to them as others, but they don't seem to help anyone apart from themselves, and are only trying to enrich themselves, which people don't like.
You know? No, of course not. I mean, at the end of the day, there's enough money for everybody to make out there.
Yeah.
But if you're just basically saying, oh, help me when I need your help, and then after that, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to help you back in return.
Yeah.
It's not pretty. Yeah. And unfortunately, this is the situation that we're in. This is the scenario. A mortgage payment holiday, I think, should be a given.
Yeah.
I think the mortgage holiday should be a given. How many landlords are tenants that are not paying their rent?
They
can't pay their full rent. You can't evict them. You cannot evict them. Does the lender really lose on a mortgage holiday? No, they don't. No, they add it onto your debt. So you don't lose. So why can't you give me a holiday?
It's not fair. It's definitely not fair.
You're not losing. It's like I said to you, oh, but we need our help. Oh, we have to, we've got to help you because we rely on you to survive. But when we need your help, you should have reserves. How much rental reserves do you have if you want to buy a new property? And then they make you sign letters saying that you won't take a payment holiday. That's what they're doing. They're making investors and vendors sign letters when they want to buy a new property, buy flats that they don't need if they won't take the payment holiday.
Yeah,
it's interesting world.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, look, so we're officially out of the EU. How do you see the financial market apart from Corona is bringing its own headaches? We've got the intricacies of having to deal with us actually leaving the EU. There are certain agreements that are supposed to protect. Well, there's supposed to be some still. There's still supposed to be some alliances that will exist between Europe and the UK around rules and regulations that are used to work within the financial sector. And from my understanding, the EU is making things a bit more difficult for the UK at present.
Yeah.
How do you see things as changing, or how do you see the relationship as working going forward?
I think it'll break down. Yeah, it's going to break down. And the longer it carries on, the longer we have a vaccine that's made within the UK as well, that's only for UK citizens, that's going to be rolled out in the next, after 3 months or 4 months to the EU. Mm-hmm. Because they were slow off the mark, and the UK was quick and decided to make it within their own country. So, yeah. You know, the EU is not going to like that. Yeah. They're not going to like, it's funny because they're not moaning to America, but they're moaning to us, because yeah. At some point, if we were still within the EU, they would have had access to that medication, yeah. and England would have been forced to do it. They would have to. But now England, they can control their own country. So they're not going to like that. And they're gonna throw their toys at the pram, which they tried to do already. They're making things difficult. I mean, I ordered something from Hackett, and I've been waiting for it for 2 months. And when I look at UPS, it says EU delays. Really sorry. You know, normally something that would take 2 to 3 days to come hasn't even turned up. And it's going to be more the same. The problem the EU have, and I do think the EU have a big problem, because the UK are trying to join the second largest customs union for trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if we join that, things will change. Mm. You know, things will change for us massively. I think the number was 111 billion was the value of the UK last year to the EU.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you add that to, you know, the union with, I think it's Canada, Japan, Mexico, they're the second largest. Now you add us to that. Just think about what the UK will be able to do. Just think of how strong pounds
the second union would have.
Yeah, and how strong that union would become. Think of all the opportunities we would have to be able to trade with Japan, trade with Canada, and obviously Mexico for goods, raw materials. You know, and also bearing in mind, you can do all this and still have your own country and run your own country
the way you want to run it,
not be told how you can play in your garden. You can play in your garden and do whatever you want, but the EU want to tell you, no, you can't play in that swing, that's my swing. We're going to give it to my friend over in Belgium, and my other friend in Spain, that's their swing, you can't touch it. But it's on my land. Nah, it doesn't matter. We tell you what you can do with that swing. That's basically what the EU is. So I was never, if someone said to me, would you leave or would you have done stay? I would have said stay, because at the time it was like, better the devil you know. Now you start, you know, you lift up the rock and you look underneath and you see what's really going on. You think, ooh, maybe it's a good thing that we left. Maybe it's a good thing. And then you say to yourself, okay, so what's our relationship going to be like? Okay, but what about new relationship? You know, it's all about new relationships, better relationships that's designed for the people of the UK, as opposed to favour other people to take advantage of the things that we are able to get within the UK. You know, there's so many things that we take for granted, like the NHS, that you don't get in other countries. So all they have to do is just jump in the Eurotorrent and go to the hospital and get treatment for free. That's like saying, Kevin, I've decided I want plastic surgery. I want to be taller. I'm 6'2", I want to be 6'4". But in the UK, I have to pay for it. But if I go to Spain, it's free, and I use their taxpayers' money. If I go to Spain for 6 months, I come back 6'4". Lucky. Basically, what a lot of people be doing, have their babies here because it's free. Better healthcare, you can get a house now, you can get somewhere to live, so on and so forth, and get benefits upon benefits, which is what a lot of people have been doing. Joining the new customs union, you know, getting involved with them, I think is a very good thing. And I think it's going to be a very good thing for investors and businesses. I think businesses will thrive massively.
For a lot of businesses, they're looking at it and saying, change, this is change. And let's face it, not everyone likes change.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but everyone, I mean, if you've been doing this for the past 30 years, and then this year is completely different, no one's going to like that. And it's trying to get used to and actually embracing the fact that things aren't going to be the same. But that doesn't mean that things can't get better. It just means that things are going to be slightly different.
You have to ask yourself a question. How are things now? So anything better than this is good, isn't it? I would have thought.
Yeah.
Anything that, if you look at how we're living our lives now, if we do something that makes tomorrow better today, because right now we are all at rock bottom. This is rock bottom. And we're lucky we left the EU when we did. Because if we didn't, we would have been in a lot of trouble. We are lucky. The reason why we're going to be able to bounce back quick and vaccinate people and protect our elderly is because we left the EU. If it wasn't for that, we would not be able to have done that. And what is going to happen now? This is probably the lowest. It's only going to get better. So if the new customer is saying you don't have to change your rules, you can manage your country how you manage your country, but now you can trade with us at a better, more favourable rate. That's going to be huge. Right. It's going to be huge because we're not restricted anymore. This is not going to be the kind of change. They're not saying to you, you can join us, but you have to change your rules and your laws. That's what the EU is saying. You have to change your laws. The EU makes you change your laws. The EU tells you that you have to let people from Spain come to your country, live here, and have free benefits and free school meals and so on and so forth and X, Y. They tell you you have to do that. You can't say no. So this is going to be better. It's as simple as that. I think Australia is also in this discussion as well. Australia's a part of it. It opens up a massive, and also they allow you to make other deals in other countries. You're not just restricted. Yeah. You're not restricted. So I can still trade through the EU. If they don't want anything to do with me, it's not a problem because we can go elsewhere. So
it seems like a more fair arrangement.
It doesn't feel like you're being dictated to, and you're not in a dictatorship.
Yeah.
You can actually do what you need to do and make your decisions, which is why I think Britain will come out stronger from Brexit and will fight. Yeah. You have to look at history,
yeah.
And look, at the end of the day, history is history. But the point I'm making is, Britain has always found a way to stay on top and be on top. And I think this is going to be another one of those situations. So it'll be interesting. The next 6 months is going to be very interesting. I want to, I remember when we did our first podcast, we talked and I said, you know, it's going to be different with mortgages. And it really was different.
Yeah.
You know, it really, really was. And there's things that you need to look out for now. You need to be careful with your furlough, be careful with your bounce back loan. Make sure you tell your brokers what you've done so they can find the best lender because the lenders will accept it. It's just not, they will have different criteria. But make sure you communicate with your advisor, tell them what you've done so they can give you the best lender that will lend to you.
Okay.
If you're a hairdresser trying to get a mortgage now, forget it. They're not going to give you a mortgage because you're closed.
Yeah,
they won't give you one. Club owner, same thing. You're not going to get a mortgage if you're a club owner because you're closed and they know you're closed. They want to see your bank accounts. They want to see your business accounts. They want to see money going in and out. They want to see these things. They didn't want to see these things before, but they want to see it now. Yeah, because they want to make sure you're still trading and that you're not under any financial difficulties. Bearing in mind, you're trying to buy a secured asset that they can take at any moment, but I think the point they're making, which so rightly so, is they don't want to take your asset. They don't want to, you know, tear you away from your asset. They want you to keep it, but they want to make sure they're lending to the right people that can keep it.
Yeah.
But once again, how do you know what's going to happen? We don't know if we're going to go to an even stricter lockdown in 6 months' time and everyone has to stop again. We don't know. Nobody really and truly knows. Hopefully that won't be the case. I can't imagine that to be the case, but coronavirus has been changing very quickly and adapting very quickly and being very aggressive. So who knows?
Yeah.
Once again, only time will tell. But things have got a bit more stricter in January, a lot more stricter. It has been a lot more difficult. Where there's a will, there's a way, but it has been difficult. Will things improve? The only way is up. You know, if things start moving in the right direction, it will get better. Things will start happening quicker. There are lenders out there that are still working like how they used to work a few years ago. And I'll name one, Halifax. They've been amazing. Yeah, Halifax has been amazing.
Straightforward.
And that's just a little golden nugget for the listeners. You know, Halifax will offer quick. I had an offer in Halifax in 3 days. We put the application through Monday afternoon. We had the offer by Wednesday. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, this is how it used to be. Mm. Halifax said, yep, we're lending. And it's business as usual for us.
Yeah.
Desktop valuation, lending it straight away. Not messing about.
Yeah.
So there are lenders that are lending. They've been fair and they're working well. And there's lenders that aren't lending so well, which I won't mention, that are making it very difficult. Some lenders are only lending up to 60% loan to value for self-employed people or residential properties. Yeah, they're not. You can't take advantage of the 85% or 90% product at all. It will not do it if you're self-employed. Yeah. So the industry is evolving. It is changing. There are new rules now that we have to abide by, so things are changing. But you have to be fast learners. You have to have good relationships, and you have to adapt and adapt quickly, because there will be a change again. But we're not sure if things are going to change back to what it was, or if this now is the new norm. Only time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's been great speaking to you and getting your input on how you actually see the scene as working. It's been very turbulent the past year, so it's always good to find out what people actually think. So I mean, thanks for coming on the show and giving us what your viewpoints are. I'm sure we'll have you again in another 6 months, where we
100%.
Well, we'll fact check you again, and see 100%. how accurate you've actually been. But it's definitely been great getting you on the show. I think what I would like to put out to the general public is, if anybody has or would like to come onto the podcast who has made money in crypto and is invested in property, I'd be really, really interested in speaking to you. It can be an anonymous interview or conversation, because I just like to get under the hood and find out the way in which this can be done and where we might actually see the scene going forward, because it seems to be the talking point for a lot of people. So again, thank you very much, Ashley. If people want to get in contact with you, how can they do that?
They can call me directly would be the best way. My mobile number, which is 07850-550-765.
We're By The Block UK. You can follow us on Instagram by the same title. And we try to keep you informed as to investments and property. So stay in contact and look out for us on our next episode. Thank you.